This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 29th of April, 2021. A double whammy of, developments yesterday. One of them, a bit of a non-development, that FOMC meeting, very much as expected. I'll get to that in a moment. The market cash session closing slightly down to unchanged, suggesting that this was thoroughly expected. The FOMC would not really be sending any signals, which it did not. And those signals were not forthcoming either in the press conference. Have a chart overnight showing that overnight on slide two in today's slide deck, S&P futures rose to new highs, hitting above 4,200 briefly for the first time ever. And that breakup happened during a break higher, I should say, happened during the Biden speech, his address before a joint session of Congress, sort of reiterating these big programs we know are on his agenda, the $2.3 trillion stimulus, and then the follow-on, more social spending focused, $1.5-ish trillion. So around $4 trillion spread over many years in these stimulus packages. I know I've been a bit of a worrywart in recent sessions compared to you, Peter. You're looking at some very strong earnings and really solid momentum. A couple of things that bother me, one of them being the sentiment extremes that we mentioned a few days back. Another one being, this is a small one, but it's something I think worth looking at. And you can see it on slide two, the small inset chart, the VIX divergence. So here we are hitting a new high, and the VIX is slightly higher than it was at the previous low or previous high for the market, low for the VIX. Small divergence there. And then we're coming into the May, sell in May and go away season, the delayed U.S. Tax season timeframe into May, where some people might be selling to be able to pay for some of their taxes, which is, there's pretty tremendous capital gains out there from this tremendous run up from the pandemic low. So I'm still a little bit cautious here for that list of reasons, but I don't know what your take is. It seemed to be the market reacting, at least not to the FOMC, but to Biden's speech.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers, and Stan and I have some presentations today for clients, and the U.S. is running at a 20% fiscal deficit, and the output gap will probably be closed by Q3 this year. So we will have an extraordinary situation in the U.S. we haven't had for half a century. I think it's bullish. I think the earnings will continue to be strong. I do agree with Stan that on the year-on-year and maybe potentially even the quarter-on-quarter basis numbers could come down significantly in the second half of the year and create a little bit of a different market climate. But I still think that the narrative is that equities is probably mostly the only game in town. And for me to really shift my view on equities, I need to see Altea space really pick up steam. And that's, it's the inflation angle. And it's the interest rate, but we'll talk a little bit more about inflation and my take on that when we talk earnings, because we had some interesting insights from Apple at their earnings release last night after the close. But I think we should go to the market reaction from everything that's going on and the Fed's ability to convince the market that it's transitory.
Inflation. Yeah, that was the focus. I try to get a bit cheeky and second guess. How the market might take this or absorb this Fed meeting, because I was fully expecting, together with everybody else, not to say that I had any special insight at all, the consensus view that the FOMC statement would say very little. You can see the changes to that statement on slide three. I used the Microsoft Word markup. I also tweeted that out very shortly after the release of the statement last night. Very, very minor upgrades to the description of the economy, and then in the press conference, just complete stonewalling that from Fed Chair Powell, that there was no discussion of tapering even on the agenda. They want to see these outcomes, blah, blah, blah. So the key was, okay, that was as expected. How did the market take it? Well, the market reaction was pretty much taking the Fed at face value, at least in terms of the time frame for when the Fed may achieve liftoff. You can see that on slide three in that small chart on the left, the June 2022 Eurodollar contract actually rose a tick or two from the start of the meeting. So no further pricing of Fed hikes either way. But the longer end of the curve in the U.S. A bit heavy. And of course, you talked about that, Peter, as what the equity market would be sensitive to. And I would probably agree that it would really have to pick up some momentum towards those lows, i.e. highs and yields, to spook the market from that angle. I'll tell you, is there anything you're seeing from the reaction in the reaction function here to this FOMC meeting?
Well, John, what we have seen yesterday, just after the press conference of Powell, is that yields started to hedge lower, and they started to go back to that 1.60%. That hit early during the week. However, if you go on slide 4, you see on the left US 10-year treasuries yields, and they continue to trade on an uptrend. And the most interesting factor of yesterday is that while Powell was speaking, is that inflation expectations data were constantly rising. So always on slide 4, you have a chart on the right, which shows the 10 years break-even rate and the 10 years US dollars inflation swap zero coupon. They both broke above 2.4% and 2.5%, which is levels that we didn't see since 2014 and 2013. So basically here, John, what I'm trying to say is that if we have any inflation surprise, for example, tomorrow is coming the PCA, the PCE index, and the economist expected to be around 1.8%. If there is a surprise in that number, then it will put inflation very closer to the Federal Reserve target, and it can be catalyst for another sell-off in U.S. Treasuries.
All right. Well, you have to watch out for that. And of course, the incoming inflation data, as we have the PCE inflation data point up tomorrow for March. I was glad you popped in a Bund chart, because I'm really focused on Bund yields as well as a catalyst for the euro, and especially in a couple of euro crosses. So on slide 5, you're showing the Bund yields. And that's really fascinating as we've approached that minus 20 basis points level twice now, and we're approaching it for a third time. But I guess there's a little bit of more resistance, slightly higher from the sort of the pandemic and pre-pandemic area. And you're pointing out Italy up issuing some bonds today, some BTPs.
Yes, John, I wanted to compare the two because there is a lot of noise about Italian BTP yields rising. But I think that people are missing the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is that Italian yields continue to stay ultra low, but bond yields have already risen to pre-pandemic, and they're pointing higher. So wherever bond yields go, they would change financing condition across all Europe. So yes, today Italy is going to show 10 years BTPs. Is going to be a focus to see how the market is reacting to that. But my focus is going to be whether 10 years bond yields break above minus 0.2%. And if they break that level, if they're going to break the next resistance level at minus 0.15%. I just want to highlight, John, that yesterday we have launched this monthly fixed income chart pack. And in there, I look at bonds as well and key levels. So for whoever wants to know more about rates and fixed income market, I invite them to have a look at the chart pack that was published yesterday.
All right. And as you're saying that, I am retweeting it on the @SaxoMarketCall Twitter account. Tune in there for a link to that chart pack. That'll be good to follow. Now, speaking of bond yields, if we look over at something that I think bond yields are certainly driving, and that is euro yen, and I'm really watching like a hawk whether we're going to break higher in bonds as a support or not for this euro yen rally, because of course the Bank of Japan has set a yield cap on 10-year JGBs at only 25 basis points. So if bond yields are able to continue higher in yields, bond yields are able to continue higher, at some point, once the cap is reached in JGBs, that spread would presumably feed straight into the currency. So you can see on slide 6, I charted the euro yen versus the 10-year yield spread, Europe versus Japan. And I believe that's Germany versus Japan, by the way. So watching that one as a key either coincident indicator to confirm this break higher in euro yen well above 130, or something that could reverse if yields calm down again. And then looking at the reaction elsewhere, we did get a weaker dollar, but to me, it's not that forceful, and it's still still iffy, the whole market, if you will, in terms of, is this really a signal that the market is taking to heart and going to run with it? So I look at something like Aussie dollar, which we've mentioned prominently in recent days. A currency pair like dollar Canada has managed to run lower, but Aussie dollar merely sort of pushed back or pulled back to the top of the range at 78. Still hasn't broken higher. You can see on slide 7, really critical area there, just above 78. And I'm watching this one closely for signs that the dollar is breaking down more broadly here. And you can see on the FX board, the dollar signal is the strongest, pipped by Nokia, which is enjoying the resurgence in oil prices. Canadian dollar also quite strong, and I encourage you, if you're an Aussie bear, to have a look at Aussie CAD. That chart looks very heavy to me. Gold not getting much of a signal at this point in time, even though it did bounce quite nicely from key support areas yesterday. And we're rattling on and on about rates and FX, but Peter, really a lot of folks are focused very much on the equity market and earnings reports. Two huge names reporting yesterday after the close, Apple and Facebook. Take us through what's going on.
Yeah, so the short comment is that it was monster earnings from both companies, as I've put in the highlights from the Bloomberg terminal. So both revenue and especially the earnings per share were a huge beat. Apple beat expectations by 40%. Facebook beat expectations by almost 50%. So again, it's the theme that I've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, that if you think equities are expensive because you're looking at forward multiples, you have to contemplate the fact that the forward multiples are wrong, because they're based on too conservative earnings forward estimates. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. I mean, all the companies are just showing blistering growth. And Apple, even so, going back to the conversation we had, that maybe growth could tail off a little bit, Apple was saying that they expected in the current quarter, but also the quarter after that, to still grow by double-digit growth rates. So, but they also talked about this chip shortage, which hit Ford yesterday. They announced that they will lose half of their production this quarter due to chip shortages. And the reason why the car makers, also Tesla, mentioned it, they're trying to pivot into other suppliers, but that is complicated because you need to write a new firmware, etc., for new suppliers. But the reason why the car makers are so hard hit is that, you know, they buy the cheapest microprocessors and they don't have the same same margins and buying power as Apple and Microsoft and other Google, for instance. So so that's why you're seeing those troubles. So it was two very strong earnings. I think that combined with Biden's speech, it was really lifting equity sales. I would not be surprised to see technology stocks, the classical speculative segments, being very much bid today. And then today, the some of the important companies that I've highlighted in red, we are on slide 8 for those that are curious. Amazon, obviously the big one, they will report after the close. Very strong results are expected there. We'll have NIO, which was a disappointment in the last quarter. It's one of the big competitors to Tesla in the Chinese market. So it will be very interesting to see that one. We have Caterpillar in pre-market session, one of the biggest one in construction. Always good to have them. I think they are really the beacon on the pro-cyclicality and the growth we're seeing in the market. And we have Ørsted, a Danish company, one of the biggest utility companies and product developers within renewable energy here in Europe. They basically set the tone for that market segment. And we also got earnings this morning from Equinor, and they are just basically mimicking what we have seen in the energy sector, that energy companies, oil and gas, is really coming back. Strong profitability. They are resuming. They're resuming dividend payouts, and they are in a very good funding position. So, interesting stuff. But I will be writing a piece on, sort of concluding what we have seen so far in the earnings season, because now we have a pretty high share of companies, so we can begin to form some firm conclusions on what we're seeing in the corporate sector.
Yeah, and then looking farther forward, the equities, at least in the U.S., certainly have to be focusing on the global minimum tax proposal, and as well whether Biden's tax hikes will see the light of day as originally intended, or be watered down. That speech yesterday, of course, also outlining his tax plans, which are quite hefty. I think the market is skeptical that what he is outlining is put into the letter of the law. Also, the speech being positioned as a way to compete with China, which is claiming superiority for their system relative to the declining West, and but it's an interesting way to position everything. Of course, Republicans against ironic that you have populist Republicans against higher taxes on plutocrats, but that's there you have it. That's their traditional role in all this, is for a lighter touch on the tax side. Let's get to the macro highlights for today. And by the way, just to mention one of the data points that rolled in yesterday without a lot of focus, and underlying the point that U.S. stimulus just drives egregious imbalances. We saw a advanced trade on the goods side, advanced trade balance of minus $90 billion. For one single month, the largest trade deficit for that number ever. And that could only be expected to deepen in the coming few months as the stimulus works through the system. Interesting day on the macro calendar today. We have the German flash CPI today expected around 0.5% month on month and 1.9% year on year, a slight increase on the latter by from the previous month's 1.7%. But then we have the first estimate of Q1 GDP out of the U.S. and these weekly claims data, which of course we need to see continuing to normalize aggressively if we're going to see that the employment numbers getting in shape for the Fed to ever mention its eventual need to shift its guidance. And then tomorrow, the March PCE inflation. Now, some housekeeping for the podcast, the Saxo Market Call podcast. Tomorrow is a holiday in Denmark, but we've recorded a conversation with our cryptocurrency specialist, Mads Eberhardt, and with you, Peter, and me, and Mads earlier this week, and we'll be putting that out tomorrow. So tune in tomorrow morning for that. I think it's a good conversation, provokes a few thoughts, pluses and minuses and risks and rewards in the cryptocurrency space. For today, we'll see how things turn out. Enjoy the crypto podcast tomorrow. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.